All right. So figure we could go over a couple of things here together, make sure we're all on the same page, and then do a little bit of brainstorming about the party makeup. First off, we are doing the Zeitgeist campaign, and I am excited about it. I will let you know it has the potential to go all the way up to level 20, but there are off ramps if we want to wrap it up sooner. You know, if we get to level 3 or 4 and we're like, we need to do something else, that's fine. We can do that too. To start with, we're doing a campaign filled with maybe fewer shenanigans than we're used to. There's been a couple of, yeah, I, that's one of the things that's real interesting about it, is that it might go past 14. Anyway, there's been a couple of things that people have brought to me and been like, hey, this is a third party thing. Can I do it? And at least once I've said no, but here's another way to do it that's a little better balanced. So fewer shenanigans. Custom setting for the campaign. We're not playing on any of our normal worlds. Lots of good information about it in the player's guide. And then, of course, more lore and things will be revealed as we go on. The two big things to note, planar travel does not work. Like, anyone that tries to go to a different plane, you stay there for a couple of rounds and then almost immediately get shunted back. And the other one, it's fairly well understood that something about the connection to the plane of air was damaged about 200 years ago. So flight spells last for 5 minutes at the max, which brings an interesting flavor to things as well. Start off playing constabularies, constables, essentially. They're sort of like a secret service. Their thing is they are to protect the nation and the people from foreign threats. So they end up doing, sorry, end up doing a lot of investigation and things like that, of, you know, these potential threats, particularly of some of the other nations that have been historically been enemies of Rissur. One of the things to note is that all of you would have passed an extensive background check. To those that have done it, it's going to be something like you got a TS, maybe SCI clearance, that sort of thing. And then there's also a what they call a magical inquisition, which, you know, use magic to make sure that you're actually loyal. And you know, that said, none of you will be harboring any secret conspiracies to overthrow the nations. That's just not where the game starts. I know that we have a rather interesting combination of races in our mostly human nation. I was commenting about that. We may get a fifth player by the time that we start in a couple of weeks that will be human. Maybe. We're still trying to talk him into it. But anyway, I think the way this is going to work is you guys are going to be the ragtag team. And oh, fine. We need somebody to go cover this. Here, you, the cast-offs, it's not that important. You go take care of it. And so, and then, of course, things will snowball from there, as they usually do. I'm looking forward to it, though. It should be fun. Oh, one of the things that will happen as we get a little further into it is the constabulary will actually give a stipend. And so the way this works is once this happens, so at level one, you will each have 1,000 gold to essentially requisition equipment. It is different, but I think it's very fascinating. Yeah, I think it could be really cool. So you have 1,000 gold to requisition equipment. And so that could be, you know, a couple of scrolls and a ring of protection. You know, you would have to do the exact math on the values. It's not going to be a whole lot at level one. And you don't start with it either. We start with not very much. But you will get handed a more important assignment, so long as you don't all die. You will get handed a more important assignment, and then, you know, you can requisition out of your budget of 1,000 gold. But the cool thing is, when you get done with an item, you get to hand it back in and get full value back for it. And as you use scrolls, from what I understand, the way it's supposed to work, you don't get charged the cost of the scrolls for using them. So you can go in and for each adventure, for scrolls and wands, I think it includes scrolls and wands. We can look. So anyway, you know, you use a scroll. Well, you could just go back and for the next time you get sent out, you can go requisition another scroll of what have you. And that kind of represents the idea of you're not adventurers on your own for this. You are agents of a government. And so they are giving you some support. And I think that could be cool.
So how does crafting yourself factor into this? They supply the materials for crafting?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think that's probably how that will work. Essentially, if you do go down the crafting route, you get your supplies. There might be some time for that. I don't think the intent of this game, though, is to be a lot of crafting because of the way that system works. But I think the way we'll handle that is you get the supplies. So you got to craft something. Well, the cost of crafting it is half of the normal cost. So you would essentially be requisitioning the supplies for half of the normal cost. And then when you get done with that item, you would turn it back in for half of the normal cost. That would prevent playing the system.
Yeah, some of the character paths are explicitly crafting, like the typical take on the technologist from what I see, or the gunsmith.
Indeed. Speaking of which, do you each know your race, class, and starting character theme?
Yes, indeed.
I think we all posted them.
You may have, but let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and recover them so that we're all up to speed on it.
Go top to bottom?
Sure.
Yes, that's me then. My character is a tiefling oracle with the Skyseer theme.
All right, cool. The Skyseer will be a lot of fun. You look to the heavens to find the things that are coming.
All right, I'm going to be playing a dwarf fighter tactician, and she gets the... What's the name of it?
Were you going Martial Scientist?
Yeah, Martial Scientist.
Okay, so you start out with this experimental strike ability that basically says if you make a full attack and you miss with all of them, you get to make another attack at your highest attack bonus, but it's got to be something unexpected. Like, you know, you attack the enemy, you miss with all of them. I smash the pipe on the wall and try to spray steam into his face, and which that has a lot of potential to be fun. And then as we get into the game, you get an opportunity to learn more of those techniques, and you can swap them out per day.
Yes.
Yes, I would say that you have to dedicate your move action to it as well, even at first level, for that to be a thing. Which is not that bad, because honestly, once you get into combat, you're pretty much going to try to be taking 5-foot steps and not move actions to move.
Unless you've got some really nimble enemies.
Yeah, even, you know, well, I mean, particularly at first level, I always tried not to provoke the attacks of opportunity, because those could be nasty at very low levels.
Yeah, but they really can be.
Blackston said your name is Armia.
Yes.
And my character's name is Snehana Dianova.
Is that a reflection of the part of the player's guide that talks about the different accents to expect from the different races?
Sure. My last character that I built had a Bulgarian name, and this is also one, so it's a very nice country.
Yeah, so Drakkar speaks Dwarven, and Drakkarin sound Russian, so the idea of a sort of Eastern European dwarf name is perfect.
When I saw that, I was like, yep, definitely doing that. So.
All right, Abe, what are you playing?
All right, so I am playing Marguerite Desjardins, who goes by Maggie, and she is a 20-year-old changeling fresh out of the academy, and joined up with the constabulary. She is a unchained rogue for her class, and she has the investigator archetype. And I will say that, yes, technically her race is changeling, although she would not broadcast that, and anyone who didn't have access to her file wouldn't necessarily know. So she is the product of a ill-fated relationship between her father and a fey creature. And doesn't talk about that. So, but she does love the city. She loves her country, and wants to do her best to make Reser a better place, and to be able to prove that people like her can be a benefit to the city and can love the city just as much as anyone else. Yes, she didn't. I say that she looks like a tiefling. So she would present herself as a tiefling, because her father's a tiefling.
Interesting. Okay. Now, which character theme have you gone with?
She is... Which one was it on here? The spirit medium is the one that she is going with. So she has some innate magical abilities that stem from her mother's heritage, but she doesn't make those really well known. She just tries to downplay those sorts of things unless they're needed. Although I think the spirit medium is a recognized ability, right? She wouldn't be looked askance for using those skills, would she?
Generally speaking, that's correct.
Okay, so yeah, she would have probably naturally leaned into some of those abilities, and so when she was in the academy, then she would have been trained in some of those things to be able to connect with the spirits of those that have passed away and find information.
Yes, so this is a set of skills that the constabulary will definitely take advantage of.
And she is pretty good at it, but she is very new to the Force. So, doesn't have a whole lot of standing, but is excited to do well. And she uses a sword cane. She has a sword cane, which I went with for my level 1 feat. I took extra traits because I love traits. And so she has the signature moves trait, which gave her access to a masterwork weapon up to a certain value, and so she has a cold iron sword cane that is masterwork. and so when she is holding it, it gives her benefits to bluff and intimidate, and is something of a family heirloom, something that was passed down that her father gave her, and so she carries it with her when she's out doing her job. And I have a picture of her. One of the things that would stand out about her, and it is generally chalked up to her tiefling heritage, is that she does have these areas on her face, her neck, her shoulders, and in some other kind of random places where she has almost like ebony snake-like scales. And she actually has to take care of those on a regular basis. They have to be watered, otherwise they dry out and they cause her issues. So,
cool. Noted. All right, Aaron.
And I'm supposed to follow that. I'm not nearly as prepared. So I'm going with a half-elf, spellless ranger, technologist. and I have not chosen a name yet.
That's fine. Not a problem. We got 2 weeks before we actually start.
So yeah, technologist, but not a focus on like the robotic mechanicals. I'm going to be going more toward the alchemical side of... I don't know that you'd really call that engineering, but I think that still fits within the world with a lot of the like firearms and stuff being alchemical.
Yes, tinkering and alchemy, very much so. Yeah, cool. Does the technologist get bonuses to alchemy stuff?
No, it does not. None of the others really do either, so I just picked the one that was actually that was closest.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a little confused by the disposable simulacrum as well.
Yes, so am I. I'm not certain that I would ever use that, since what is the point of having another entity when you're burning a standard action to get a standard action?
Maybe that it gets hit instead of you?
Maybe?
I think one of the benefits is that it is smaller than you and potentially could go into a space that you couldn't. You kind of send it out to do something.
Yeah, utility could be somewhat useful. I was looking for the size. I seem to recall it was a medium size or a small sized.
It's 5 pounds. Creature. Yeah, it's 5 pounds and fits in a pouch or pocket, so definitely small.
So it's essentially familiar with a little less HP. And less action economy. Significantly less action economy.
Significantly less action economy, but in some cases, more utility. More. It hits harder. It'll hit harder because it's. When it hits, it's as if you hit. And so it gets to use your AC and your to hit and all those things.
Right.
I think it'll be fun to play around with and kind of see what it can be used for.
And what race were you going with, Steel?
I decided on half elf to give a little bit closer to the human empire, at least half blood related to it.
Yeah, that works. The continent was actually originally settled by elves, and the humans kind of came along later. And so there are still some elves and half elves hanging around today.
And multiple bands of elves that don't necessarily get along.
Indeed. So a couple of interesting things also to cover is there are two overlapping planes that exist. There's the Dreaming and the Black Gates. And the Dreaming is essentially the equivalent of the Feywild, but it is not a totally separate plane. It's like they overlap. So it's almost like the land itself would look similar, but you phase from one to the other. And in fact, there's a really neat fey ability where they can phase into the Dreaming, walk their 30 feet, and then phase back out of it to be able to, you know, get around obstacles or, you know, move without drawing a tax opportunity. There is an exception to that, and that is that in this world, rings of gold stop teleportation and walking through the Dreaming and all of those things. So you would probably know that the constabulary headquarters, all of the doorways, the external doors, the external windows, the building, it has bands of gold kind of sneakily hidden in it so that people can't just teleport in and out of it. And then the Black Gate is kind of the same idea. It's overlapping, but that is the path that essentially the dead souls take to leave this world.
So the rings of gold thing, being around doors and windows, would prevent line of sight teleporting, but Does that do anything against Dimension Door, where you don't have to have a line of sight? So can you just go through a wall that doesn't have gold in it?
Looking for the exact text here. Gold could be fashioned into a barrier against teleportation.
I was reading through that and then thinking, characters I already have seem to be able to circumvent this already.
Yeah, I think the intention here is, particularly in buildings where this is done, there are bands of gold set in such a way that Dimension Door also does not work.
Aw. Not that we have an arcane caster at the moment, but it was an interesting thought.
It is. I also found it particularly interesting that the police tend to, each of them, carry a gold ring or two, and it sort of is their version of one of their versions of handcuffs. They go to arrest someone, they'll pop the ring on their finger to keep them from being able to use one of those magical shenanigans to get away. That's particularly fascinating.
Or actual handcuffs. I was wondering about that. Do the agents of the constables, aka the party, is that part of their standard equipment?
That's what the book said.
The inexpensive things, yes. So you know, a pair of non-magical handcuffs, your uniform, your starting weapons, all of those things are sort of provided, and you don't have to worry about the exact cost of them.
But the non-magical handcuffs are or are not gold.
Yes. So every constable has access to binding ropes as well as handcuffs. Most handcuffs include gold wire or thread, which can be tied off after the cuffs are closed. So yes, you would have handcuffs with the gold loop as part of your kit.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. That might come up.
It's also worth noting that the kind of house rule that we have sort of kind of played with has been codified here, that player characters, all they have to do is reduce enemies to zero hit points, and then you don't have to worry about it after that. You haven't killed them, you've just incapacitated them. And you don't have to use any of the penalties to use non-lethal damage. And that is just the special training that constables receive.
I missed that part. So no negatives to non-lethal on anything.
Essentially, yes.
That could be interesting. I shoot you with lead going several hundred miles an hour, and it does not kill you.
I mean, contrary to what you see at Hollywood, most people don't instantly die when they're shot.
But a hole through your body bleeding out is lethal damage.
Oh, well, this is true, yes. I don't think any of you are taking firearms, though, so it's kind of a moot point.
Or in my case, crossbow bolts.
Very cool. Okay. That's the majority of what we needed to cover. Any questions or anything else to go over?
General background stuff. How are we starting? Like, has this group of cast-offs been together for any period of time, or is it we just got thrown together, or stuff like that?
You would be aware of each other at the office, but this will be, I think, the first time that you're put together in the field.
I neglected to mention that one of the other tools that she's going to carry, that Maggie will have, is a sap, which I would like, and I guess she will probably requisition these things, but it's only 5 gold to get a spring-loaded wrist sheath. So essentially she would want to keep the sap up her sleeve out of sight. That way, if she needed it, she could spring it into her hand and use it to do non-lethal damage and try to subdue a criminal if they need to take somebody down.
Yeah, that's fine. You essentially have the way the normal Pathfinder rules work for creating a character. You have somewhere around 100 gold for your initial setup. That pretty much applies here. That's essentially the budget that you have for putting together your character. So that should cover that, no problem.
Okay. Well, yeah, in that case, she has it. So that makes it easy.
Yep, there you go.
There you go. And then the 100 gold initial equipment, I think it's normally rolled, but that's before the 1,000 gold of items and all?
You don't have that yet. That will actually come at the end of your first assignment.
So we start with starting equipment and nothing else.
You start with starting equipment and somewhat fancy handcuffs.
Yay. Yeah, that might change some of the stuff I was planning. Since my guy's craft alchemy, I was hoping to have some of those crafted before the start, but if there is zero gold available for that, that kind of puts a stop to that. Unless I could factor the starting equipment leftovers into that.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Let's see what I can come up with there.
Because it does make sense for you to have a couple of interesting things up your sleeve.
Yeah, there are a lot of alchemical items that most parties don't even consider or realize exist.
Indeed. And then if you start taking equipment tricks to go with some of them, there are some fun combinations.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that may be it. I will update if we get a confirmation on a fifth player with information there. Sounds like you guys have all done at least most of you have done some reading on the context PDF. So I'm excited. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Avi should post your cheat YouTube.
Oh, yes. I need to share that over. I even asked, and then I never actually shared it over. So, but I found a YouTube video where they basically read through that book.
It's not really read through the book. It's kind of like a summary.
Well, summary, whatever. Same idea.
He tries to hit the high points. Yeah, it was good.
I appreciate it because I think that there's a lot of... I should say there's not a lot of resources for things about this campaign online. So... it's nice to at least have that. I gotta say, I'm excited about playing a game that changes a lot of the usual motifs. Playing as law enforcement with a responsibility to not just uphold the law, but hold ourselves to a higher standard than just adventurers who can go bully people. And also the fact that we don't have a wizard in the party or somebody like that. I mean, now maybe that'll change with a fifth person, but the fact that we don't have somebody like that, I think is not a bad thing.
Yeah, that is one of the things that I like about it. I was also very humored. So it's sort of a steampunk-esque setting. And there are a few places in here where it calls that out and it's like, no. Gentlemen, don't wear goggles. Ladies, never glue gears or cogs onto their clothing. No.
What? That's going to make it so difficult to find fan art.
Just get the normal fantasy fan art.
I think, what do they call it? Gaslamp. Gaslamp fantasy might be the closest genre.
I will have to look up Gaslamp fantasy. I don't think I've heard that before.
For more classic works, stuff like Dracula and even Sherlock Holmes can kind of fit into it. And then modern things, the Dishonored games would probably fit in there as well.
So, Blackston, can I ask you some questions about your character?
Sure.
So, Armia, is that what she goes by?
Yes. Or she may go by Mia. I haven't decided that yet.
Did she grow up in Reser?
Yes. Kind of her basic background is she was found along the edge of the forest. It's only speculated on how she survived being out there on her own. But it's assumed that she was taken care of by some fey creature that eventually brought her to the edge of the forest. And then she was raised by a family that took her in.
So she has fey dealings in her past. That's definitely not going to cause problems working in the constabulary.
Well, she'd pass a background check, evidently. That's going to be the case with all of us.
I feel like we're the diversity hires. They're like, okay, we got to get a certain number of people that are not humans.
14%, right?
And Steel, I know you don't have a lot of things worked out for your half-elf technologist yet. What was the base class that you're starting with for him?
Yeah. Spellless Ranger. Kind of like half ranger, half rogue.
Sneak attack?
Yes. Limited to favored terrain or favored enemy, though.
Oh, I should do... I should do some work to tell you what some good favorite terrains or favorite enemies would be, huh?
One of our internet connections just flaked and I didn't get any of that.
I should do some work to tell you what would be some good favorite enemies and favorite terrains.
Ah, yes. I was looking to keep wilderness... probably forest as the initial favored terrain, but then the second would probably be urban.
Yeah, urban would be a good one. Forest will eventually be a good one as well. I don't know what term it uses for this, but like aquatic, but not under the water, but, you know, on boats, essentially. Oceanic, however it would say it, would also be a valuable choice.
Let me go look that list up again.
Yeah, Maggie is definitely a city girl. She's all about urban. So, and ultimately, her prestige class will lend itself directly to that. So, she loves Flint. And is not going to do nearly as well outside of the city as she will within it.
And that's fine. There's a lot of urban that will happen in the campaign.
So around Flint, it sounds like Flint is the center point of a lot of things. Is it more plains or forest, or what's around the city?
Jungle, essentially, if I understand correctly.
Oh, hey, that's on the list. Okay, so yeah, jungle would be the first pick then, followed by urban. My character is more of an out-of-city person than an in-city.
That will be an interesting theme as we go into those different places, actually. Which characters feel more at home?
Of course, the fun thing at level one is none of that is online at level one.
Oh, of course not.
Oh, GM, question. I looked in the book, and the book had several different languages that it said were related to different areas. Are those, is that pretty much all the languages that we're going to run into, or are there any other languages that we might be unaware of from the book, but would be a good thing to know?
I think, I mean, there's actually quite a few of them that get mentioned. Primordial is the it's kind of like how Common normally works in regular Pathfinder, and then Common ends up being more like how Draconic works. But then, of course, there's also Draconic and Giant. There are a bunch of different languages that are there. But I would say if you can't find a language in the player's guide, then you should assume that it probably doesn't exist in this world. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Reason I ask is because Maggie is super smart and she knows 9 languages. So she knows just about everything that's in the book, and I just wanted to find out if there was anything that was better. So, but if that's it, that's good.
Yeah, 9 pretty much does cover all of the common languages, doesn't it?
Well, her dad was a very successful merchant, and so she grew up with a very international household and is just a smart cookie, so picked up languages very well.
Yeah, I would think that a human favored enemy would actually make a lot of sense.
It would be either human or the, I don't remember the name now, the ones that started the Industrial Revolution, the sworn enemies.
Which one started a revolution?
Denor.
Yes, them.
Oh, the tieflings, that's right. Us.
Well, Danor is actually 81% human and only 17% tiefling. But yes, that is where most of the tieflings are at, and I believe that's where all of them are from.
Okay, so yeah, human and human. So human.
The tieflings are the government of that country.
Tends to be, yes. Yeah, you gotta figure something really big must have happened for, you know, a big percentage of their population to turn into tieflings and for them to kill magic within their borders.
That was related to the death of a goddess 500 years ago, right?
That is what is generally believed, yes. And yeah, that might do it.
That, I mean, it did happen immediately next door in the in those really messed up lands to the east. So I'm just noticing that Draconic, Giant, Goblin are the languages of some of the more savage races in Burr. And then it says that Burrans have a Spanish accent. So I'm just realizing that Giant, Goblin, and Draconic all sound like Spanish gangsters.
Yes.
So general world question. Magic is there and technology is there. Are technological replacements for certain magical things considered available?
Like what?
Well, might be giving a bit of the character build away, but I think this has been discussed a little bit before. Say, like, instead of endless ammunition, a belt-fed ammo thing for guns or crossbows or things like that.
So, from a lore perspective, yes, that is definitely the sort of thing that would be possible. One of the themes, actually, of the world is it's sort of become a competition, even within Flint, and particularly within the Nation of Resur. It is a competition between the old arcane ways of doing things and the new alchemical and technological ways of doing things. So most of the things that used to be able to be done with the arcane, they have now figured out ways to do it with technology.
And then if you had a technological equivalent, it wouldn't be affected by an anti-magic field.
Right. Which is actually why their industrial revolution got kicked off, because the people of Danor, they lived in this place where magic was no longer possible, and so they started building things with technology.
That's true. An entire country is essentially anti-magic field. That's true. Does anti-tech field exist in the world?
As far as I know, no, that is not a thing.
Okay, because I think that actually is a spell somewhere.
Yes, but that generally refers to like the high-tech stuff. So in Galarian, that's going to be the stuff that comes from where the big spaceship crashed to the north. The anti-tech field would shut that stuff down. I don't think that would affect, like, a steam engine or a muzzle-loading pistol, something like that.
Or an alchemical engine in a golem.
Right. So is no one going after the mad shootist? This seems like a lot of fun.
To be fair, I actually thought that steel might be going after it, so I didn't even go that way, because I already built a gunslinger in another game. And I figured, I'll let somebody else run that way. So I was a little surprised tonight about the pick, because I thought maybe steel was leaning that way.
Yeah, I'm regurgitating an old build of mine that never got used much, and rebuilding it using Gunslinger, I don't know that I could actually rebuild it properly. But yeah, the bad shooter sounds kind of fun. Definitely conjures the image of the TF2 sniper. Mechanics question next. Rules as written, you have to have a +1 enchantment bonus before you can apply special abilities. But that is typically house ruled away. What is going to be used here?
I think that we will by default run rules as written. And so let's stick with that. I think they made that choice on purpose in Pathfinder to make some of those things a little harder to get a hold of.
Sure. I think the one rules as written exception is the amulet for natural attacks. But the normal ones, yeah, gotta have the +1.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anything else that I need to warn you about. If anything comes up, I can let you know. Yeah, like I said, it should be fun. Looking forward to it. Starting hopefully in 2 weeks.
Awesome.
All right, looking forward to it. Do you have any idea what class our fifth member might end up going with?
No, I will say if I do talk him into it, it will actually be his intro to Pathfinder. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Intro to RPGs, period, or just intro to Pathfinder?
That I'm not sure. I will have to ask.
All right, well, we will play nice.
We'll try not to trigger a TPK first session.
I mean, blowing everyone up is a possibility, but I have confidence that you guys will avoid it.
Yeah, we don't have Thunderhead around.
There is a note towards the end of the first adventure document, and it's essentially, your party may all die and kill everyone here. That's fine. Just have them roll new characters and go for revenge. The people that wrote this have some great humor, and they show it off a few times. Like in the GM's guide, there's a place that says, if you really wanted to, you could just, you know, have in this one particular place, have a letter laying out that reveals the entire plot of the entire module, but no one will believe them. And then it's like asterisk, don't actually do this.
That would be kind of funny, though.
There's another place where it's like, if your players mess this up badly enough the first time around, it may take them more than one round to convince everyone that they know what they're talking about and they're serious.
This sounds like it's going to be a blast.
Maybe literally.
Only if we bring one of those shootists.
You're going to make me actually do some research these next couple weeks, aren't you?
Into the mad shootist? I mean, it could actually be a really good fit for what you're wanting to do. And interestingly,
it would technically fit the baseline concept I'm going from better.
Yes. And interestingly, but you don't have to be a gunslinger to make it work.
Oh? I'll have to look at it a little bit more.
Could you do it with fighter, probably?
To qualify to become a mad shootist, a character must fulfill the following criteria. Feats, gunsmithing, the man with two guns is god. Skills, craft alchemy 7, knowledge 7. That's it.
Yeah, you would have to take the gunsmith core concept. Unless the GM waived the feat requirements, which I think it comments about at the start of the section.
Yeah, you would have to take the gunsmith thematic feat instead of, let's see, what was it you said you were going to use?
Technologist.
Yeah, so you'd have to take gunsmith instead of technologist, but you could still be a ranger.
Oh yeah, I did read this. So exploding guns is a common thing with this prestige class. If you lose your weapon and you do not get it back within 3 rounds, it explodes.
No, if you lose your weapon and someone else touches it, and then you don't get it back within 3 rounds, and then it explodes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which, actually,
you could kind of
sounds
like
a feature.
Got to imagine the cost of rebuilding your weapons every time you blow one up has to add up.
Well, again, that's where the whole you're being backed by a government agency thing comes in. So you don't have to pay for it out of pocket. You just get a very stern talking to from your middle management overseer, who then gives you another pistol, and you then also convert that one into your inventive gun.
Right. The amount of paperwork and tongue lashing you get every session continually increases.
Roll a sanity check for paperwork.
Yes, seriously.
So, quick question that I was thinking about, given the fact that so many of us are playing non-humans, how disliked are tieflings and elves and dwarves in this city? Like, are we getting dirty looks when we walk down the street? That wasn't the impression I got when I read through the book, but I may have missed something.
You didn't read through the whole thing, did you?
I think I read through most of it.
So, it depends upon which race you're talking about. I will say that the Kingdom of Risor is 86% human, 6% elf, 5% halfling, and other is 3%. And some of those other do get mistrustful looks, I would say. So those of you that look like tieflings, you're immediately going to be thought, oh, they're from Danor. And Danor is essentially the other nation that has been at war with Risor multiple times. And you will quickly find out that one of the themes of this is trying to determine whether or not Risor and Denor are going to go back to war together, or whether they're going to make lasting peace.
I see. So on the surface, there's peace, and there's everybody likes everybody, but underneath the surface, it's not always that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And also remember, different people are different, and they're going to have different feelings about it. And so there are some that are not going to care, and there are some that are going to think, oh, they are probably spies from the enemy. I'm not going to trust them at all.
Does that also include within the constabulary? Or within the constabulary is Is there generally a recognition you've passed the tests, you've done the background checks, you're good?
So yes, there is going to be the recognition that you passed the background tests. Therefore, you know, your loyalty is not in question. I would have to imagine though, that there will be some that will still not appreciate having to work side by side with a dirty tiefling. Those cursed Anorians, you know.
Awesome. This is going to be great.
Do dwarves and humans have any feuds?
I think less so. One of the things that dwarves are actually known for is the philosophy of eschatology, which is the idea of making sure that you end things well. And in fact, I'm really surprised that no one took the eschatologist feat, since it gives you something almost like Breath of Life at level one. It's really good.
I thought about it. I could change it.
Yeah, each of those feats were really interesting and gave really unique takes. Something that would really affect the story in a unique way.
Yeah, they're really interesting. I like what they did with these. Playing an eschatologist, dwarves from any nation feel sympathy toward Hyde Eschatol, the dwarf that came up with this philosophy. It is on the proper ending of things. It has given birth to a whole field of academic study devoted to finding the perfect way to end friendships, romances, business relationships, wars, literature, even one's own life. And that is not a reference to suicide, by the way. That is just setting yourself up to have a good end of your life. There are some of the extreme factions that would dabble into the darker things that could be implied, but that is not the majority. Anyway, and then the theme feat that goes along with it is Icy End of the Earth. With the dire knowledge that the world shall end in ice, you do what you can to prevent such fate from befalling your allies. Once per day, you may stabilize a fallen comrade by touching them as a swift action. You can use this power on any creature who has negative hit points or who has been dead for less than one full round. And if you use it on someone that's dead, they come to essentially one hit point above being dead. So, you know, if they have a con of 10 and they get hit really hard and drop down to negative 23, and so they're dead, you can come up and touch them and they stabilize at negative 19. So they're not up, they're not dead. You prevent actual death from occurring. Oh, and then also once per day, you can summon a temporary zone of cold, stationary, take cold damage equal to your level while in the zone.
I thought about taking that because I'm a dwarf.
Yeah, I mean, the Martial Scientist is really cool too, though. So, whichever you would prefer.
So something I'm trying to figure out here from the gunsmith is you start with effectively two up and fighting with pistols, but you can't afford a single pistol until after level one.
Well, if you start with the gunslinger class, then you would get a pistol just given to you.
I guess that would be one way, huh?
Yeah, but I think it's possible to make use of those without being a gunslinger.
The other thing to keep in mind is that's something you could requisition, probably.
But don't you still have to pay the cost out of your available gold for things that are requisitioned?
Yes.
How much does a pistol cost?
So the setting says commonplace guns, which causes them to be 25% of their list price. A single shot pistol is 1,000 gold. At 25% is 250 apiece.
So you could get two for 500 gold of your 1,000 gold.
Which doesn't come in until after the first mission. As I'm understanding what was said, we've got 100 gold to create or gather starting equipment.
Yeah, that's the way it works. The first the first, I guess you'd call it a module, has a note in it, and it is not at the very beginning of it that says, at this point, the players now get their 1,000 gold to requisition stuff.
Yeah, we're just new recruits. We don't have a budget yet.
Well, there's probably a guy over in a shady neighborhood with a van, and you could probably pick up a pistol from him.
Probably.
And then we can bust him for selling guns illegally. And then
take all his stuff.
Exactly.
Oh, and this explicitly lists player characters must spend the appropriate gold listed for ammunition. So you actually have to track bullets.
Once again, I can say as one who's played a gunslinger that if you play a gunslinger, then you can essentially you can purchase ammunition for a tenth of the listed price, which comes out to like a gold a bullet.
Is it normally 10 gold a bullet? That's whew.
Now, that's also in the more high magic guns are rare setting. So if they're already lowered to 25%, I think they're marked, not looking at it, but I think it's like 10 gold a bullet.
Black powder is 10 gold. A firearm bullet is 1 gold.
Are you doing black powder and pellets, or are you doing cartridges?
What does the setting say?
Paper cartridges.
And is firearm bullet considered a paper cartridge? I think that's what this is saying.
Yeah, so there are metal cartridges, but you would not be using those.
So listed at gold at 25% would be 25 copper.
So if it's 25 copper and then 10% of that, because as a gunsmith, it would literally be 2.5 copper a bullet. So it makes it very easy to get a hold of enough ammunition.
Carrying this bag with like 6,000 rounds in it.
I think usually they call that a drum magazine, but yes. Actually carrying them, you're going to run into more issues with that. Are we keeping track of weight by chance?
So long as you don't abuse it, no, you don't have to. You don't have to manage the little details of it.
All right. I'm not intending to abuse it, but the idea of carrying around even 100 bullets, you're starting to get a lot of weight.
Until you can afford a bag of holding.
What you could do, potentially, Steel, is start as a level 1 gunslinger and then even cross-class into something else after that. But that would just give you the firearm to start with. It would give you the feat that you need. It would give you, because of the class, it would give you the much more inexpensive ammunition, and then you can go into fighter or whatever the other branch was that you were thinking about going.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do some research over the next couple weeks. Maybe spending like 60 hours digging through everything again.
So I think Gunslinger would use a paper alchemical cartridge, which would be 12 gold. But again, 25% of that, so down to 4 gold. And then 10% if you're... Well, but then 10% of that, if you're a gunsmith, brings it down to, what, 40 copper? 4 silver a shot?
Yeah.
And... in the long run, that would be provided. The cost of it would eventually be covered by the force. You would have to... The amount that you want to take out each time would have to get deducted from your requisitions. But the way I understand it, those consumables you can renew each time.
So essentially, every mission. You could turn everything in and completely rebuild your equipment.
Yes.
Based on wealth per level.
Yes.
Is that what ends up getting tracked, the wealth per level table?
I think that is essentially what they're doing. Because at partway through level 1, they give you 1,000. And so I expect it to follow along with the wealth per level.
Okay, yeah, so first 1,000, second 3... Or actually, no. First, 0. Second, 1. Third, 3, etc.
Right. So, gives it to you just a little early, even.
Be before the ding?
Yeah, about halfway there. Maybe even a little before halfway.
GM, quick question about the sword cane. The sword cane, the sheath is sort of the other aspect, the other part of the cane.
Right.
So can I get like sheath upgrades and have them apply to that portion of the cane, or are those not available?
Like, what sheath upgrades are you thinking of?
Not finding the page right now, but I know there's a page that has like weapons accessories.
So you're thinking of like the combat scabbard and the false bottom scabbard, the hollow pommel.
Yes. Yes, things like that. I think one of them allows you to like put to kind of treat your weapon in its sheath, if I remember correctly. And then like the combat scabbard would allow it to be used as an offhand weapon, things like that. But I didn't know if those are even feasible given the fact that it's the bottom half of a cane. If not, that's fine. I just want to know if I should even be looking at them.
I would think that would be possible. Maybe let's look at them on a case-by-case basis to see which ones make sense. Like, the idea of a combat scabbard beefing up the other half of the sword stick so that it can be used, that makes perfect sense. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that's not just a part of the way the sword cane works already.
Okay. That is good to know. And then, is there a means to apply, whether it's like poisons or oils, things like that, to the blade in the scabbard? So when it's drawn, those things are applied? Or is that something that has to be done outside of the scabbard? Because I can see a couple of them, like the false bottom scabbard says it has a space large enough to hold a potion flask, but I'm not sure if that's just for like sneaking a potion in with you in the bottom of your scabbard.
I think that's what that's for. I do not, I'm not aware of a item that automatically like coats a blade with poison or something. That sounds cool, but I don't know of one that's official.
I thought I remembered something like that, like something that was in the pommel that you poked a button and it would slide down the blade.
Well, there's another one called a hollow pommel. It says it can hold something as large as a flask or small as a rolled piece of paper, but then it doesn't tell you what it's used for. Is it just another hiding space? Perhaps so.
I think so. There is a specific magic weapon called the snake bite that, let's see, this may be what you're thinking of. No, that just increases the DC of a poison applied to it.
I think I found something.
Inject, it's a special ability. A enchantment. An injecting weapon can hold up to 3 doses of injury poison as a swift action. The wielder can coat the weapon with one of the inserted poisons.
Yeah, so Josh found poisoning sheath on Archive Nethys. Scabbard contains a strip of sea sponge. By carefully pouring a dose of poison into the empty scabbard, you saturate the sponges with the toxin. Fibal and wet for up to 4 hours, preparing the scabbard. Normal risk of poisoning yourself, blah, 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 blah. The next weapon you pour from the scabbard is automatically poisoned, as if you had directly applied poison to it.
Okay, so that is the concept, and 50 gold. So that's probably a requisition type item. But here is the application, and this may not work. But potions can be purchased for a certain amount, And some of them are meant to be applied to weapons, like bless weapon. And so would it be possible to essentially put the potion into there so it would also essentially be absorbed by the sea sponges, treating the blade, and likewise kind of when the blade is pulled out, then it uses up the potion's worth, but that's when it would start ticking down its time. Is a potion the same as a poison in this application?
For a potion, I don't think so. I think with potions, generally, you actually have to drink them. There are some alchemical... Oh, what do they call those?
Salves, I think.
Yeah,
so salves, this is
maybe an oil even. There's a way to prepare a potion as an oil.
So on the list of... Okay, potion or oil. It's on the list on the potions page. And the particular one is called Bless Weapon. It is a weapon touched, and the weapon then gains plus one enhancement, bypassing DR of evil creatures and striking incorporeal creatures, becomes good aligned, etc., etc., and it automatically confirms critical hits or critical threats. So, ordinarily, that would take a standard action to apply that. So, that's all. It just seemed like that might be some cool synergy if that was able to be prepped in the sheath. Granted, it's like 50 gold for each encounter.
I'm thinking there is a wondrous item that's a sheath that lets you essentially put a plus one on a weapon. I'm trying to find that for comparison. The Scabbard of Vigor. Yeah, I would think that would be the kind of thing that we could do. Boy, that required looking at about 5 different pages to come to a conclusion. But yeah, it looks like one of the things I wanted to figure out is, can you apply the Oil of Blessed Weapon directly to the weapon? And it looks like you actually can, because the target of that spell can be a weapon. And then something like the Poisoning Sheath, I think, could work. So essentially just what you would have to do is requisition a custom combination of a sword cane with a poisoning / oil sheath. So all that to say, I don't know that that's going to be a start the game with kind of weapon, but that is definitely something that you could ask for.
Okay. I will make a note of it then, because that would be really fun and cool.
Yeah, it looks like there might even be a whole category of oils that could work, like a line weapon. There's probably some other ones too. Keen Edge at level 3 could probably be a thing.
Awesome. That sounds like a really interesting combat utility to kind of grow with. So I have it noted, and that will be something that she looks for, that hopefully will come once she gets rich. Oh, Steel, I was going to mention something, because I don't know what you've thought about taking for your level 1 feat, but if you take extra traits, one of the social traits, I believe, is rich parents, and yes.
I seem to recall that. I had a mental note to look that one up because I didn't remember what it was named.
Yeah, you get 900 gold to start with. That would help a lot with buying 2 pistols.
Yes.
And you're there half are definitely, elf, right?
There definitely useful traits out there.
Well, and if you consider, if you're starting with 2 pistols at level 1, you probably have rich parents.
Yeah, sounds similar to a D20 character I built back in college that had like 9,000 gold worth of pistols at level 1 or something, just due to the way the modern wealth system worked.
This abstraction represents what would realistically be a complex system involving very large quantities of paperwork.
Yep.
What is that?
That's part of the requisitioning equipment. I'm guessing somebody involved in the writing of this has actually been in law enforcement in the past, because there's a lot in here about, yes, you can do this, but it takes a lot of paperwork.
Those are the best books, though, the ones that are written by somebody who actually has experience in it.
Some of these prestige classes are a lot of fun, too. So for future games, what we might do, and if we play around with these and really like them, what we could do for future games is have a standing option that instead of taking traits, someone can take one of these extra feats as their, you know, in the place of taking two traits. And then that would unlock being able to go into one of these prestige classes as well.
That would definitely give reason to think very strongly about that, because those prestige classes are amazing.
Yeah, some of them are really fun.
So literally the urban empath, which is the prestige class that Maggie's going to end up going into, it will allow her at the third level in that prestige class to call the city to help fight for her, and she can literally rearrange streets and walls just as a standard action. She can cause so many 5-foot squares to just rearrange themselves according to how she wants them to be.
A la Doctor Strange?
Yes. And she also gets 60-foot tremor sense as long as she's in an urban environment.
I will say, Aaron, having a gun user that can sneak attack is potentially really powerful. It can be a pain to pull off, but it is an exceptionally powerful thing.
The initial build I had of that spellless ranger, was able to sneak attack at range, was able to take attacks of opportunities within 30 feet. It was an interesting build.
Takes a lot of feats to be able to pull that off, though.
Oh my goodness, that was a stupidly feat-heavy build. So, interesting thing with Gunsmith. You can draw an attack with firearms if you had quick draw and two weapon fighting feats. What does that do for feat progression? Would the character have to take two weapon fighting normally to get improved?
What was the question, Steel? I missed part of that.
So the gunsmith, whatever you call these things here in Zeitgeist, it's benefit is you can draw an attack with firearms as if you had the quick draw and two weapon fighting feats. So my question is, how does that work with feat progression? Would you have to take two weapon fighting normally to get improved?
If it was me, I don't think I would require you to take it, because you essentially have it because it's giving you the capacity of having it. That would be my thinking. Otherwise, it would be really lame to have to then waste a feat slot to go and re-get what your really cool class gave you to be really cool.
On the other hand, though, you're getting, if you rule it that way, you're getting two really good feats for the price of one, which makes it kind of overpowered.
For the price of a trait, for that matter.
Is it it's the trait ability, the feat that you get?
It's the theme feat, which replaces traits in this setting. So the big difference between the normal feat and this benefit is the benefit is only usable with firearms. But yeah, it leaves a weird progression thing, especially for my build where I want to go for improved.
Improved two weapon fighting pathfinder. I believe, yes, it has a base attack bonus requirement of +6. So you would have essentially two-weapon fighting and quick draw. But in order to pick up prove two-weapon fighting, you would have to have a base attack bonus of plus 6 and a dex of 17. So I would rule that you still have to have those, which is going to require you to be at level 6 before you actually get feet. So it's not going to break the early game because you're not going to be able to start level 1. Oh, I've got my in-game feat, and then my level 1 feat, I'll just pick up improved two-weapon fighting now. You won't be able to do that.
Right. Because improved gives you the extra attack, which you have to have an extra attack normally before you can take that. Would a potential compromise be to, if I took improved using the benefit as a prereq, then improved also has the same limitation as the prereq? Only usable on firearms?
I think actually that would make sense, because one of the prereqs of the improved is that you have two weapon fighting, and you would only have two weapon fighting in respect to firearms. So the minute that you pulled out two hand crossbows or two daggers, you don't have two weapon fighting for that. It doesn't apply.
All right. I think technically rules as written, it wouldn't work, but I agree that it's kind of lame. So that's fine.
Cool. Yeah, that save some feats on a feet heavy build.
Just so long as they're not all left feet.
That makes dancing difficult.
When I originally read the gunsmith.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Black. I didn't mean to cut you off.
When I originally read the gunsmith, I only read it as you can draw your firearms as if you had quick draw and two weapon fighting. I didn't see it also said attack, so it does just grant you two feats with firearms.
Basically, yeah. Some of the others are just as powerful or more powerful, though, like being able to raise people from the dead, essentially.
All right, so I have a very important question having to do with your characters. So I need you all to think about it, because this just came up in conversation and I realized we hadn't covered it. So are your characters good dancers?
Probably not.
I don't think mine would be. Mike think he is, but probably not.
That's fair.
Armia might be. It would make some sense.
All right. Well, I'm just going to say Maggie is a good dancer. So she might have to teach you guys how to dance. Or at least teach you some courage.
Performance is charisma-based, right?
It is. But if you are just dancing for your own enjoyment, not to put on a show, is it really a performance? Or is it a dexterity check? I don't know. Either way, she's not particularly charismatic. She's not a super charismatic build because she's a rogue. But I think she probably is a good dancer.
Armia seems like the type of person who would go and dance in the rain, so she probably is decent at it.
Well, don't be surprised then if Maggie wants you guys to all go out after work one day and go dancing and have some fun.
Next thing you know, everybody's going to have rich parents.
Not me.
Do note, though, that if you do that, you're giving up one of your potential first level feats to get traits back.
And since no one is human, I don't think anyone else gets a second first level feat, so that would be your single feat. So yeah, that's something I've got to juggle for my build and figure out. But you could potentially have some fun and retrain feats a couple levels later.
Yes, that is a valid way to go about it. Although, I don't...
So essentially your parents disown you?
Something like that.
I don't think
they
I would
cut you
let
out
you
of the will.
I don't think I would let you retrain away the trait feat.
Extra traits.
Particularly when it's that trait.
A little too much Limbarger in that one.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other traits that can give you nicer weapons to start out with as well. Signature moves is one of the one that I'm using in this particular build to be able to afford a weapon that is of no greater value than 900 gold. And another one I think is Family Heirloom, which is one of the it's a family trait.
Melee only.
Okay, but either way, Family Heirloom or Signature Moves, those allow you to get a mastercrafted weapon of some value.
Signature Moves looks more fitting for my build.
But you only get one weapon that way. Of course, if your class is going to give you the other one, I suppose it'd be all right.
Signature move also gives you the plus one bluff and intimidate. Although sometimes your GM will really stick it to you and make you start combat by trying to use this.
You pull a weapon on someone and they're not just going to stand there and listen to you?
Yeah, something like that may have happened a while ago.
Well, I'm using signature moves, so I don't mind starting out combat by telling somebody to stand down. Although I'm not sure that Maggie is going to be that intimidating. I did something I almost never do, and I rolled all of the different height and weight and age and all that kind of stuff just to see what it would come out if it was rolled. And she is 5'5", and she's 110 pounds. So she is not a very big person to be intimidating bad guys into standing down. We'll see how well it works.
Sometimes those small ones are the ones you got to be afraid of. Although that tangents to a question I was going to ask that I forgot to ask. Are we rats or are we point buy?
I thought about that. Some of you guys have already got your points. You either rolled or bought. How did y'all do that?
We did point buy.
I rolled for my stats.
How many points did you use for your point buy?
20.
Okay, so you can either use a 20-point buy or you can roll.
20 is lower than normal. Interesting.
But I would say for this one, don't roll them 1,700 times until you get the one that you want.
Yeah, I normally roll terribly. We'll have to if I didn't have a character already kind of laid out, I might do the 46 in order. A little more lenient than 3d6 in order, but that's been of interest to me a few times just to see what would come out of that.
4d6 order is scary and exciting.
Yeah, you roll your stats, then you decide what class you're going to use.
Yep, did that before. Did we do that on the first game made?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we did that on the one I played in down on the island, the one that eventually spawned all of this.
That's how I ended up being like the ship's captain or something.
Yep. Well, because you have no idea what you're going to get for stats until you roll it. And you're like, oh, my strength and dex are horrible, but I've got a really good wisdom. I guess I'll be a druid.
Yeah, like a -2 to charisma or something. If I said anything, it was always like taken the wrong way.
As far as rank within our... Are we all peers within the unit, or is there going to be a leader, etc.?
You are peers within the unit.
Very good.
And then you guys can work out in game whether one of you rises to leadership or not.
Yeah, we will. I guess we'll see organically who kind of steps into that role.
Yep. Usually somebody does.